dramatic before turning to threats. My next dance was with a major in Dedham's army, whose career was on the rise. He'd just been put in charge of leading soldiers out to Osfrid's southernmost colonies to investigate Ikori border raids. He waxed on about my beauty, making all sorts of poetic analogies, like how my eyes were the color of bluebells in the spring. After him came another magistrate, one who ranked higher than Mr. Collins. He was followed by a bishop of Euros, a man who seemed far more concerned with worldly than spiritual affairs. On they went, running together. I was eventually given a break and sat on the dais with Mira, trying to cool myself with a crystal-covered fan. "It's exhausting," I said. "Tell me about it," she said, covertly rubbing her sore feet under the table. "I take it more than a few men were fine with marrying a Sirminican?" I knew the answer. She'd been as busy as me. "That remains to be seen," she said with a sly smile. "It's hard to know anything about them now. Mostly all they do is go on about my beauty and use pretty words." I glanced at her in surprise. "That's almost exactly what Warren said."
"Really?"
I nodded. That all these men would try to flatter me, but that he was the only one who'd make an offer to me based on my qualities, and his need to have a partner whose counsel he could trust. Her eyebrows rose.
"I didn't hear anything remotely like that from my lot tonight. I still think that initial offer was presumptuous, but..."
"But?"
"Maybe you shouldn't dismiss him so quickly."
"Why, Mirabel Viana, I never thought you'd say such a thing." She scoffed.
"Well, that was before I heard my hair likened to the night sky."
"Was it the Major?"
"Yes," she said, and we both fell into laughter.
We sat little after that, enjoying our brief rest. We watched the crowd, the other girls dancing and flirting with their admirers. Most had overcome their initial shyness and were soaking up the attention. Clara, in particular, seemed to be loving it. She was dancing with the Major, and I wondered what compliments he had for her. Apparently, he was trying to increase his odds by talking to all of us. Mira suddenly stood up, a look of surprise on her face. "What is it?" I asked.
"Is nothing. But I need to check something. I'll be right back."
She hurried down the dais without a glance. I looked around trying to spot what had caught her notice, but all I saw was a sea of faces. Soon I was swept back up into the great game. When the party finally dispersed, nearly 5 hours had passed. The excitement and adrenaline had faded, and I only wanted my bed. My feet ached. As soon as I was back in the antechamber, I slumped against the wall, closing my eyes in relief. Someone's arm linked through mine.
"Easy there, my lady. Don't pass out yet."
I opened my eyes.
"I told you not to call me that."
"I don't think anyone would think I was being literal tonight." "Can you walk?"
"Of course."
I straightened up, and Cedric slipped his arm farther around my back, letting me lean into him. Other girls were helping each other as well, all of us worn out as we made our way to the carriages. "It'll be a lot easier after this," he said. "Smaller parties, private homes, one-on-one visits at the house. This was just to get their attention."
"I hope it worked."
"For you it did. I had to turn away droves of them. There just wasn't time."
"Well, I hope you picked only the ones who..."
I came to a halt near the carriage he was leading me to and glanced around.
"Where's Mira?"
Cedric looked as well. It was nearly the middle of the night, and the scene behind the hall was one of chaos, filled with horses and coaches and Jasper's hired men. The girls glittered a little less now, and there was no need for the earlier meticulous order. Mostly we wanted to get in a carriage and go home.
"She's here somewhere," Cedric said, "probably already inside one of these. Come on."
He started to help me into one of the coaches when a voice behind us said, "Adelaide?" We both turned to see Warren Doyle approaching. I stepped back down.
"How did you get through?" exclaimed Cedric. "Those guards are supposed to keep everyone out."
"Mr. Thorne, I'm the governor's son. They don't keep me out of any place."
Warren studied Cedric a few moments and then turned his enamored smile on me.
"Adelaide, I know more invitations will flood your door now, so I wanted to issue mine in person. My hope is I'll get to call on you soon. But my mother is also hosting a dinner in a few nights, and we would love for you to join us. Along with a couple of other girls, of course."
"That's very kind," I said. "I'm sure..."
We'll check our schedule and get back to you, Cedric interrupted. As you said, we'll no doubt receive other invitations, and there are rules to be followed.
Warren looked Cedric over. You're very big on rules, Mr. Thorne. I admire your integrity.
We'll be in touch, Cedric said pointedly.
Thank you for the invitation, I said, offering Warren a smile in the hopes of relieving the tension. He smiled back, bowed, and then melted into the crowd.
I glared at Cedric. It's like you don't even want a big commission. He thought about it a moment.
I do. But maybe not from him.
Why not?
I just don't think I like him.
You don't even know him.
I know he's arrogant and full of himself.
Sounds like someone else I know.
Adelaide. He leaned toward me, dangerously and improperly close. You saw how he was, how arrogant he acted.
To you? Because you were provoking him. I'm not saying that I want to run off with him here and now, but we certainly can't cross him off yet. That's my decision to make, not yours.
I glanced around and pitched my voice low. We're supposed to be working together on this. I can't do my job here if you offend every suitor who comes my way.
Your job?
Yes, I said. I can read men. I know their romantic intentions better than you ever will.
Cedric's voice was snide. Right, I'm sure you learned all about men's romantic intentions after years of desperately throwing yourself at them in stuffy ballrooms. How exactly did that work out for you, m'lady?
A flush filled my cheeks.
I wouldn't expect you to understand the ways of the upper class. Between your common blood and pagan...
Is there room here? Sylvia strolled up to us with a weary smile. It was obvious she hadn't heard our conversation, or she might have been more uneasy. Cedric instantly put a charming expression back on and lent her a hand.
Of course.
When she was inside, he helped me up. As I was about to step in, he stopped me, holding my hand with his other arm around me. He leaned close to me so no one else would hear. That closeness threw me off, making me briefly forget everything but his eyes and lips.
Adelaide, I'm not trying to...
What? I demanded, my agitation returning.
What is it exactly that you're trying to do?
We were suspended like that for a moment, and then his face hardened.
Nothing. Like you said, I've only got common blood. I'm not trying to do anything.
He lifted me inside and shut the door, telling the driver to go.
Chapter 15. My emotions were a storm within me when we got back to the house. I was fuming at Cedric, of course, and I had every right to after the way he'd behaved. At the same time, I inexplicably felt like crying. Even in the tensest moments of our early times together, we'd never truly fought like that. Having left with that anger between us made my chest ache. As hurt and furious as I was, I couldn't stand the thought of us at odds. It was confusing, and my own heart was a mess. My rumination slammed to a halt when I found my bedroom empty. I'd assumed Mira had been ahead of me since she hadn't been outside when I was talking to Cedric and Warren.
Nothing to worry about, I thought. She must have been in one of the later carriages.
But as I prepared for sleep and the night wore on, there was still no sign of her. Everyone else was back, blearily making their way to bed. It left me with a dilemma. Should I tell Mistress Culpepper? What if something had happened to Mira? On the other hand, I knew Mira's ways. It was entirely possible she'd sneaked off to explore the city after all. Reporting her absence would get her in trouble. Cedric would have been a neutral party to go to, but after our fight, I wasn't willing to do that. Mira was tough, I told myself. She'd be okay. And sure enough, when I woke up, she was in her bed.
I was worried about you, I told her.
I didn't ask her outright what had happened, but the expectant tone of my voice left no question that I was eager for more information.
I'm sorry, she said, pausing to stretch and yawn.
I didn't mean to scare you. Thank you for not telling anyone.
When she still didn't offer any explanation, I asked, Were you out exploring the city? She hesitated.
Yes, foolish, I know.
Something could have happened to you. Promise me you won't do it again. It's not safe for a woman alone.
The world never is, she muttered.
I waited for more, but it didn't come.
You didn't promise?
Because I can't.
Mira.
Adelaide, she interrupted. You have to trust that I wouldn't do anything dangerous or otherwise without a good reason.
But,
well, we all have our secrets. I know you do too, and I respect that. I nodded, knowing that pushing her would make me a hypocrite when I held so much back.
Just tell me this, I said at last. You weren't out with the Alanzans, were you?
I couldn't think of anything else covert she'd be doing and wasn't sure I could handle two heretics in my life.
She laughed in surprise. No, why would you think that?
Because, well, you're from Sirminica and you always know so much about them.
I do, she said, sobering a little. I was raised among them.
I'm sympathetic to them, but no, I'm not one of them.
Their ways are just kind of etched in my mind. When I see a clear full moon, I think how it'd be perfect for one of their weddings, and I always know their holidays. Like, tomorrow is the Star Advent. Not that I'll celebrate it.
Star Advent, I repeated, unfamiliar with the term. Is that some ritual full of sordid acts?
You're thinking of the spring rites, and they aren't actually so sordid. Plenty of Alansans have strong morals. The Star Advent is a more solemn holiday.
I nodded, unsure how to feel about her actions.
I was glad she wasn't in danger of being arrested for heretical religion, but if it wasn't that, then what other danger might she be entangled in?
I received no answers, and a whirlwind day soon ensued. There was no rest for us after last night's gala. The afternoon was packed with appointments from prospective suitors who wanted to speak to us in private. The house was put to full use as Mistress Culpepper arranged rooms for these meetings and assigned chaperones to each one. I had four meetings throughout the day, one with a gentleman I'd met last night and three who were new. Miss Bradley chaperoned two, and Ayana did the other two. She said little to me, only giving a smile of greeting. So many men walked in and out of the house that day, but Cedric wasn't one of them. It ate at me in a way I hadn't expected. Since leaving Osfrid, I'd seen him on a daily basis. His presence was a fixed part of my life now. A quip here, a knowing smile there. Without him, Wisteria Hollow seemed like an entirely different place. I felt like a different person. A very unhappy one. He showed up that evening to play chaperone at a party being hosted for the top three girls. Me, Mira, and Heloise. Heloise was the Swanridge girl who'd inherited the second spot. Like Mira, she'd originally had a slightly less precious stone, so they'd done a hasty upgrade from peridot to emerald, which allowed her to keep her green wardrobe. It was a painful reminder of Tamsin. I tried striking up a conversation with him along the way, but he said no more than was absolutely necessary. He barely made eye contact. When we arrived at the home of one of Cape Triumph's most prosperous merchants, he melted into the background, letting us claim the attention of the party while he simply supervised. The house was impressive by Adorian standards, a large estate with many servants. This was among the top positions a glittering court girl might marry into, and I tried to imagine myself as mistress of such a place. There were few in Denham that could match it, except perhaps the governor's home. Our merchant host was a pleasant, fairly attractive man who doted on all of us, but nothing special about him struck me. I smiled and made small talk, but did little else to distinguish myself. If I were being mercenary and simply comparing men based on their resources, Warren still won handily, at least once he was established in Haddison. When we left, our host told us he'd be in touch, but it was obvious Heloise was his favorite. She beamed on the ride home, and I was happy for her. "You three are going to the governor's house tomorrow night," Cedric told us, "for a private dinner. I won't be able to escort you, but I believe my father will."
Whatever Cedric might think of the governor and his son, he kept his face and manner perfectly businesslike. That ache in my chest intensified. The rest of the girls were home from their engagements when we returned to the house. They were all still up, abuzz with the latest news from town, which was much more substantial than in previous days. Lorandian soldiers had been spotted near the northern borders of the Osfridian colonies. A man, drunk on too much wine, claimed he'd been rescued from thieves by two pirate vigilantes.
To the west, Ikori had been sighted on Osfridian lands, stirring up fears that they might march on us. Some even claimed the Ikori were harassing the northern colonies. Back here, a merchant ship carrying sugar and spices had disappeared, meaning prices would rise. A pagan colony called Westhaven had received permission from the Crown for settlement. So much of the news was overly sensational that I had a hard time believing it was true. There was little fact to back it up. The only item I felt certain of was the news about Westhaven. I knew it was religiously tolerant, not exactly pagan, but for most people, those things were one and the same. I went to bed, not interested in gossip. Mira stayed a little longer, but soon followed me up. Yet when I woke once, in the middle of the night, I could see by the moonlight that her bed was empty. When morning came, she was back. "Do you want to discuss what happened last night?" she asked as we got ready for the day. "Are you talking about when you weren't in your bed again?" She shook her head. "I'm talking about you and Cedric refusing to make eye contact." "Oh." I turned back to the mirror and pretended to be fixated on pinning back a curl. "We had a fight. That's all." "That can't be all. Not if it's bringing you both down so much. If you were mad at someone like Jasper or Charles, I'd say not to worry about it. It's business. You don't ever have to see them again. But with Cedric, I can tell it's different. There's a bond there. Something I can't quite put my finger on." "I owe him," I said softly. "And that's forced me to make some hard choices." "Like choosing him over Tamsin," I thought.
"Do you want to talk about them?"
"Yes. But I can't." She started to interrupt, and I held up a hand so I could continue. I know, I can tell you anything. But that doesn't mean I should. Not yet, at least. Some things have to stay secret. Like why you go out at night. I keep hoping it's some romance with a dashing and wealthy man, but I doubt it. What I know is that you wouldn't do it without good reason. And that you wouldn't keep it secret without good reason. That's how it is with this. There are lots of things I wish I could tell you. Mira caught me in a hug.
You don't have to tell me anything. I trust whatever you're doing. But,
she pulled back and looked me in the eye,
you need to fix things with Cedric.
You're not yourself. Her words stayed with me, but I never had a chance to fix anything. Cedric was gone again that day, and the schedule, much like the previous one, packed with appointments. Heloise received a marriage offer from the wealthy merchant, which she readily accepted, making her the first of us to seal a contract. Without her, Clara was bumped up to the top three, and accompanied us to the governor's dinner. Jasper chaperoned us, as Cedric had mentioned, and told us that his son was out with friends. I wondered at that, since as far as I knew, Cedric didn't have any friends in town. It seemed more likely that Jasper simply wanted the honor of bringing us to such an important event.
"Welcome to our home," said Mistress Doyle, greeting us personally at the door.
Warren's mother was a striking woman, with no grey in her black hair and a walk full of confidence. I remembered Cedric saying she'd been a baron's daughter, and the marks of nobility still remained. The governor joined her, and he too was a handsome man, showing a strong resemblance to Warren. His whole nature was gregarious but charismatic, which seemed appropriate for a politician. He soon wandered off, more interested in talking business with other men of the colony than investigating prospective daughters-in-law. Warren greeted us as well, but it was me he honed in on. Clara, and to my surprise, Mira, both made attempts to charm him. Equally astonishing was, well, how good Mira seemed to have become at it. I couldn't believe any man would be immune to that lovely, knowing smile of hers. But Warren was. As soon as it was polite to do so, he took my hand and led me through the party. "I'm so glad you're here," he said. "I'm excited to show you my family's home, and let you meet some of Denham's finest citizens." Many of the guests I'd already met at the gala and last night's dinner, and I realized that although this get-together was for Warren's benefit, other bachelor friends of the governor were scouting us out too. The house was even finer than the merchant's. I came to realize that no place in Adoria would have that old, regal feel of the elite in Osfrid. Affluence was displayed in a newer, more modern way, and once I got used to that, I could appreciate the magnificence of the Doyle estate. Of course, we wouldn't have anything like this right away, Warren told me as we entered a conservatory holding a large harp and a few other instruments. Great luxuries in the New World. But I'd make sure we aren't in some shack, either. Eventually, we could achieve this level. That's what my father did.
Has he been governor for long?
I asked, studying a painting.
It was by Morel, a famed Lorandian artist, and Warren had acquired it while studying in that country for a year.
I wondered if Cedric's agent had considered the Doyles as potential buyers for my painting.
15 years.
It was obviously a matter of pride for Warren. Lord Howard Davis was the governor originally appointed by the king. My father was lieutenant governor, and together they helped establish Denham and drive out the Ikori. When my father took over, he continued that legacy, making this a safe and prosperous place.
He's done an excellent job, I admitted.
Everyone knows Denham's the most successful colony.
Money and trade flow back and forth between it and Osfrid.
Warren made a slight face. Well, Osfrid seems to get more of the money, but...
Warren, dear.
Mistress Doyle entered the room, gliding beautifully in a cream-coloured satin dress.
You've monopolized this poor girl from the moment she entered, and there are two others to entertain. Let me take a turn, and give her a break from your declarations of love.
Both Warren and I blushed at that, but he didn't deny it. He kissed my hand and obeyed his mother, with obvious reluctance. She shook her head and gave me an indulgent smile as she linked arms with me.
I apologize if he comes on strong, she said.
Not at all, Mistress Doyle, I replied, even though it was exactly what I'd told him the night of the gala.
He's very charming. You must call me Viola.
And thank you. He is charming. Not that you know it from the scattered way he's conducted this courtship. We strolled back out to the main party in the drawing-room, but she kept us far enough away to speak in private.
But you must understand that he's been very anxious to wed. We had our sights set on one of the glittering court's girls, but it was unclear if your ship would arrive in time.
When does he go to Haddison?
In a little over a month.
That's not a lot of time to contract a marriage. Viola gave me a knowing look.
Isn't it? I hear one of you has already accepted an offer.
She smiled when I didn't answer.
I understand your hesitation. It's wise on your part. Marriage is binding. You want to ensure you're making the right decision.
Exactly, I said. A servant came by with champagne, but I shook my head. It was obvious both Warren and his mother had an agenda, and I didn't want to get tipsy and accidentally agree to something. And I'm very flattered by your son's attentions. I just want to make sure this is good for him, too. It seems like he would have arranged the marriage without ever meeting me. She gave a small laugh.
No, he's not that far gone.
If you'd seemed incompatible at your first meeting, he'd have resisted. And if I'd found anything amiss upon meeting you, I haven't, by the way, I'd have made my objections clear.
Thank you.
But let's be straightforward, she continued. That apparently was a shared trait in the Doyle family.
Marriages are rarely made for love, though certainly love can follow. Why, I barely laid eyes on Thaddeus before we wed, and I could scarcely believe my parents would arrange such a thing. Me, a noble woman, married to a barrister bound for the New World. But you see, he was a rich barrister, and my family was out of money.
Ah, I said neutrally, that must have been very difficult. I remembered suggesting a union with the nouveau riche to Grandmama on the day I'd met Lionel ages ago. If she'd been more open to it, both of our lives would be very, very different now.
It was, she admitted. But I've done my best to bring what I could of that noble lifestyle here.
Just because many here in the colonies have humble roots, just because our towns are still rough and tumble,
well, it doesn't mean we can't aspire to the great legacy of our mother country. That sort of transformation is really what your glittering court is about, isn't it?
I suppose so. Mr. Cedric Thorne and his father call us the new nobility.
Quaint.
Her eyes fell upon Warren, who was chatting with Mira. She looked far more animated than I'd seen her around any other suitors, but Warren appeared distracted and kept glancing at us. Viola turned back to me.
I'm proud of what I've established here.
And even though my husband is a good man, well, I can't forget the great dignity of those ancient bloodlines of Osfrid. I'm glad I was able to pass on some of my exalted heritage to my son, even if my old title means little here. And I'd like to see my grandchildren carry on a similar legacy. That, of course, is where you come in, my dear.
She looked at me expectantly, but I was thrown into complete confusion.
I beg your pardon?
My grandchildren, like my son, will become leaders in this land. Many, my husband included, will tell you hard work and character earn that position, and that is part of it. But blood is critical. And when you and Warren wed, I can rest easy that two noble bloodlines will be passed down to my descendants.
A strange, chilled feeling began to spread through me. I don't know what you mean, Mistress Doyle.
I told you you must call me Viola. No need for titles among us. Not even a countess's.
The room threatened to close in on me, and I thought I might faint. Sternly I steadied myself, taking a deep breath as I worked to reveal nothing on my face. I hadn't come this far to let it all fall apart.
I'm sorry. You must forgive me. I'm just not following this conversation.
You're very good, she said. You give nothing away. No doubt you've had to become good in this past year in order to achieve what you have. I might have doubted myself had I not so vividly remembered seeing young Lady Whitmore, Countess of Rothford, at a party 5 years ago. Your parents had just passed, and Lady Alice Whitmore was already perfectly aware her family's fortunes were fading, and that she'd have to secure a good marriage for you. You were too young at the time, but she was already at work. I recall thinking you were so lovely, and that she'd have no difficulty in arranging things.
Viola paused meaningfully. But when I saw you on the docks at your arrival, I realized I must have been wrong. You look very much like you did 5 years ago. More mature, of course. Very much a woman. Maybe even more beautiful.
Mistress Doyle, I said stiffly, refusing to use her first name, you have made some sort of error.
She beckoned a servant to replace her champagne glass.
Or is it possible you had a good match but didn't want the man? I can certainly understand that.
Her eyes lingered briefly on the governor.
Whatever has led you here, I am glad. It was very adventurous of you, very risky, but as you can see, everything happens for a reason.
I stared off at the room, buzzing with guests I barely took note of. I hadn't expected this. I had nothing prepared. At last, conceding, I asked, "Does Warren know?"
Of course, it's why he's so eager. Like me, he'd long dreamed of a worthy match. We'd assumed the glittering court with its cheap imitations was the best we could manage. I've met those girls in the past, you know. They do an admirable job, but their common roots often show. When I made inquiries about you that first week, and of course I did after I recognized you, I learned how exemplary you were. Perfect in every exam they gave you. As though you'd been born to this.
I dragged my gaze from the room and met her squarely in the eye.
Mistress Doyle, what is it you want from me?
You already know.
I want you to marry my son. I want you both to be happy and have a long, prosperous life together, governing Haddison.
She paused again in that dramatic way of hers. Even you can't find fault with this. You obviously came here in search of an advantageous marriage. Can you honestly tell me there's a better one available? One with such a future? And a man who's smitten with you? He is, you know, regardless of your title. And securing a marriage early would certainly benefit you. As an unwed woman still legally bound to your grandmother, you could very well be taken back to Osfrid by some enterprising bounty hunter. Marriage binds you to your husband. It frees you.
Are you threatening me? I asked.
Lady Whitmore, she said softly, I am simply laying out the facts for you.
Dinner was called, and I numbly took my place at the table. Viola, thankfully, was at the other end, but Warren sat right next to me, as happy as ever to see me. He chatted on about the great dreams he had for his colony and how he hoped to implement them. I nodded along, smiling appropriately, as my own thoughts spun wildly. After all the control I thought I'd seized in my life, I suddenly felt adrift, as helpless as the bobbing grey gull tossed on the storm. I felt alone and trapped, desperate for an ally. But Mira was seated far away, and Cedric... well, who knew where he was?
Back in Osfrid, at Blue Spring, discovery of my title would have been disastrous, almost certainly sending me back to Grandmama. Once I'd set foot in the New World, my security had increased exponentially. Even if I was recognized, and I'd never believed I would be, there was a whole ocean between me and Osfrid. For anyone to send word back and take action would be difficult and time-consuming, especially if I'd be engaged in the next few months. Unless Viola was right. If someone forcefully tried to take me back now, hoping to gain a reward, I'd have no recourse. I'd be trapped on a ship for 2 months and promptly carted off to Osfro. Marriage made me independent. Or, well, bound to someone else. Bound to someone I chose. At least I thought I'd be able to choose. Studying Warren now, I wondered if he was a bad choice. Before speaking to Viola, I hadn't thought so. She was right that instantly falling in love with anyone was far-fetched. The smart thing to do was secure my future with someone wealthy and reasonably nice. Warren was both. But I didn't like being threatened, and I really didn't know just how much damage that threat might cause. And it helps that I've had so much guidance and experience under Father's rule, Warren was telling me. I took part in some of the battles against the Ikori savages, and even though they're gone, there's still work to be done in cleaning up Denim. Not just villains and highwaymen, there's the pirates, of course. And there are heretics skulking around, you know? In fact, he glanced at the clock. We're dealing with some very soon. I blinked, trying to clear my head and refocus on him. What do you mean? Today's one of their dark holidays. The Alonzans, I mean. The demon worshippers. We've learned of where they're meeting, and we plan on arresting them. He had me hanging on his every word now. When? We'll leave in 2 hours or so. Maybe less, depending on how long it takes us to group and plan our course. I'm afraid that means I'll have to break from the party early, he said apologetically. But I feel it's important I lead the charge, in light of both my current and future positions.
Tomorrow is the Star Advent, Mira had told me yesterday morning.
Cedric can't be here. He's out with friends tonight, Jasper had said on the way here.
And I knew. I knew Cedric wasn't out with friends. Not exactly. He was out with other Alonzans, off celebrating this Star Advent in some grove or another. A grove that would very likely be raided by armed men. Desperately, I tried to keep my wits about me.
This is so fascinating, I told him. But you must forgive me, I'm getting the most terrible headache. It's hard to pay attention.
Warren instantly turned solicitous. Is there anything I can do?
No, thank you. I think the best thing is for me to go home and rest.
I forced a smile.
I guess we'll both be leaving early.
I found Jasper and told him my story. He wasn't happy about my leaving, but Warren's impending departure softened the disappointment. Jasper arranged for one of his men to escort me home in the carriage, and then returned to wait for the other girls. Clara was deep in conversation with a banker, and Jasper had no interest in pulling her and Mira home early for my convenience. I thanked the Doyles for their hospitality, and Warren again regarded me with concern. Viola looked as though she knew exactly why I had a headache, but she offered nothing but polite smiles. On my way out, I pulled Mira aside. "Are you okay?" she asked. "Do you want me to come home with you?" I shook my head.
"No, but I do need your help. Answer 2 questions for me."
She looked me over curiously.
"Yes?" "Do you know where the Alonzans will meet tonight? For their Star Advent?"
Mira stayed silent for several moments. "What's your other question?"
"I need to know how you get in and out of the house undetected."
"Those are big questions," she said.
"And I wouldn't be asking them without a good reason," I returned, echoing what she'd said about her nightly escapes.
At last she sighed. "You can't tell anyone. You know I won't."
"Of course not," she said, giving me a weary smile. "I shouldn't have suggested it."
She told me what I wanted to know, and I thanked her with a hug. Jasper's driver called for me, and I hurried off with him into the night. Off to save Cedric!
Chapter 16.
Most of the girls were still out when I returned to the house. Upon hearing my headache story, Mistress Culpepper immediately sniffed my face to make sure I hadn't been overindulging in any spirits. When she was finally satisfied with my excuse, she sent me off to my room. As I shut my bedroom door, I experienced a weird feeling of déjà vu, recalling how I'd used another fake headache back in Osfro to win myself some privacy. It felt like a lifetime ago. I immediately stripped out of my elaborate lace party gown and began searching for the most practical thing I owned. There wasn't a lot. Most of our wardrobe was geared toward maintaining our grandiose image. Even our casual attire was embellished and rich. I finally found one of the day dresses I'd worn on board the ship, a simple one of pale pink lawn, scattered with white flowers. A light cloak and sensible shoes were the only other things I'd need in our warming spring weather. To make my escape, however, I'd put a large woolen nightrobe over it all. Creeping down the hall, I peered in each direction before making a sharp right turn at the hall's end. There, just as Mira had said, was a door that led to a small staircase and a landing used for storage by the household staff. One flight below led to a hall behind the kitchen. One flight above provided access to the attic. I ascended quickly and came up under one of the roof's gables. In front of me was a window with a sliding panel that overlooked the house's back grounds. I left the robe on the floor. That had been Mira's suggestion. Wear the robe over your clothes going in and out. Then if you're spotted in the hall, it just looks like you got out of bed. A lot easier to explain than why you're walking around in regular clothes in the middle of the night. Outside the attic window was a trellis that more wisteria had climbed. Staring down, I reminded myself of how I'd successfully climbed the captain's shelves on a rocking ship. Of course, the distance hadn't been nearly so high, and I'd had Cedric to catch me. Cedric. He was the reason I had to do this. I swung out of the window and grabbed hold of the wooden slats. Mira had assured me the structure could hold my weight, and as I painstakingly inched my way down three floors, I saw she was right. The trellis stayed steady. I exhaled in relief when my foot touched the ground, and allowed myself only a moment's rest before I headed across the property. As I did, I couldn't help but give a rueful headshake. If there was a secret way out of the house, of course Mira would be the one to find it. A bright quarter moon and stars shone in the clear sky above as I moved at a steady jog. Warren's words rang in my head about how he was leaving soon to assemble his men. I had to hope there'd been some delay while they organized themselves in town, but they'd most certainly make that up if they traveled on horseback. Mira had been adamant about where the Alansans and Cape Triumph would meet tonight. I only needed to follow her directions. It didn't take long to reach a wooded area she'd described to the north. Whereas Blue Spring had acres and acres of manicured grounds, Wisteria Hollows were almost immediately reclaimed by the wilderness. Little had been cleared, and there was no obvious path. Only the position of the moon let me know I was still going in the right direction. It was rough terrain, and I stumbled on fallen logs and branches, my skirt snagging on brush and other obstacles. It was a good thing these ship dresses were almost never worn anymore, because I'd have a lot of explaining to do if it was scrutinized. I reached a highway of packed earth that was supposed to lead to a fork. Although uneven in places, the road made for much easier traveling, and I picked up my pace. But as more and more time passed and no fork appeared, I began to wonder if I'd misheard the directions. And where were Warren and his men? How much time had passed? Surely it was getting close to the 2-hour mark. For all I knew, I'd show up just as Warren's men swooped down on Cedric. Or maybe they'd already arrived. No. I told myself sternly, that's not an option. I haven't gone to all this trouble to save him from persecution just to see him caught right in the open. The fork appeared at last, and I left the road as directed. I found a steep slope with a valley below, and eventually an oak grove. At first I wasn't sure how I'd locate the Alansans. As I approached, I could soon discern the glow of tiny lanterns, just like the one Cedric had used at midwinter. I picked up my pace, moving at a jog across the open area of the valley, feeling conspicuous in the moonlight. But no one called out to me, and when I reached the oaks, I could see the dark shapes of the Alansans in a circle around the lantern's diamond configuration. They seemed to be saying some sort of prayer in Old Reuven. I'd learned the language from an old governess. Most of the words seemed to be about stars and light and reconciliation, but the setting gave it a sinister edge. That old fear came back to me, bringing up all the stories I'd heard from priests and gossips. It was nearly enough to make me turn around and leave them to their fate. But I knew Cedric stood among them somewhere, even if I couldn't pick him out in the silhouettes. I hoped there might be a natural break in their invocation, but it just kept going on. With time ticking, there could be no graceful way to get their attention.
"Hey!" I yelled. "You need to get out of here! The governor's men are coming!"
The chanting abruptly died away, and all those dark figures turned toward me. My heart stopped. This had been a terrible idea. Maybe they didn't use dark curses, but there were certain ugly physical ways of harming someone, especially an intruder to a sacred ceremony.
"Who is that?" demanded a deep male voice. "Somebody get hold of her before she reports us."
"I'm trying to help you," I shouted.
Two people surged toward me, and I started to scramble backward when a familiar voice in the circle exclaimed,
"Adelaide, what are you doing here?"
The men reaching for me stopped and glanced back uncertainly.
"Do you know her?"
one asked.
"Yes,"
Cedric broke from the circle, his features becoming clearer as he approached.
"What is this? You shouldn't be out here."
I clutched hold of his sleeve. "You have to get out of here. They're assembling, the governor's men. They know you're here, and plan to attack."
"Impossible,"
said the first man, the one with the deep voice. As he came forward, I could make out long robes around him. They were almost like those an Orthodox priest might wear, but these were dark on one side and light on the other.
"No one knows we're here. This is private land, granted to me while the owner is away. And how could some girl possibly know what the governor's doing?"
Cedric stared down at me for long moments.
"She would know," he said grimly. "We need to go."
"But the ceremony isn't over," one woman protested.
"It doesn't matter," said Cedric. "It's more important for us to..."
"Look!"
someone cried. There on the far side of the valley, on the opposite slope, I could see men on horses charging down. A few carried torches. I couldn't be certain from this far away, but it looked as though all were armed.
"Scatter!" Cedric cried. "Different directions! Stick to the woods, where the horses can't follow!"
Everyone instantly obeyed, and I wondered if they continually drilled for this sort of threat. Cedric grabbed my arm, and we ran toward the side of the valley I'd come from. For a while, all I could hear was the pounding of our feet and ragged breathing. Then behind us I heard shouts, and once the sound of a pistol. Cedric slowed to a stop and looked back.
"What are you doing?" I demanded. "We have to get out of here."
Another pistol shot sounded, and so help me, he started to move back toward the grove. I hurried forward, pushing myself in front of him.
"Cedric, don't!"
"They need me," he said. "I'm not going to run. I have to help them."
"Help them by staying alive.
Unless you've got more weapons than I can see, you'll only get yourself killed."
"And me."
That last part seemed to stir him. After another moment's hesitation, he turned and continued on our previous trajectory. After what felt like an eternity, we finally reached the tree line and burst into the woods, barely slowing our pace. Branches whipped at me, further tearing the dress, and we both tripped on more than one occasion. I had no idea where we were when Cedric finally brought us to a halt. We stood there, both of us panting, as he looked around, scrutinizing every tree.
"We lost them," he said. "They didn't come in this direction. They either got delayed going after someone else or headed for more accessible areas."
"Are you sure?" He studied the area once more, but all we heard were the ordinary sounds of a forest at night.
"Positive. No horse could come through this. And we had too much of a head start on foot, because we let the others be caught instead."
He made no attempt to hide the frustration within him. I sagged in relief, unwilling to admit how terrified I'd been of being found with a group of heretics by the governor's men.
"How did you know where we were?" Cedric asked.
"Mira told me. She told me how to sneak out, too. She's very resourceful." He snorted.
"She's not the only one, apparently. Do you realize what kind of danger you put yourself in? Sneaking out of the house? Going through the woods alone?
No more dangerous than religious dissidents, who insist on holding services out in the open when their faith is punishable by death," I retorted.
"Why do you keep doing that? Why don't you find some sacred windowless basement to worship in? It's like you're trying to get caught."
Cedric sank to his knees. There was less light out here, but I could see him put a hand to his face. "The Star Advent has to be outside,"
I should have suggested another place. This one's privately owned, like Douglas said, but they've used it before, and that's dangerous. I should have been more prepared. Help them more. I put a hand on his shoulder, moved by the anguish in his voice. You helped them. They may have all gotten away. You gave them some warning before the riders came. He stood back up. Adelaide, why did you come out here?
Why do you think? I asked.
Warren was bragging about how he was going to go round up some Alonzans tonight, and I knew my favourite heretic would be out with them.
Adelaide. Although I wasn't able to truly meet his eyes in the darkness, I felt compelled to glance away from the intensity I could feel. There was no way I could tell him the truth. That Warren's words had filled me with dread, that my chest had tightened with the thought of something happening to Cedric, imprisonment or worse. The bureaucracy of the glittering court, vile as machinations, none of it had mattered if something happened to Cedric.
And I didn't want to see your father steal your commission if you got yourself killed in some weird star-worshipping ceremony.
His amusement returned.
You don't know what Star Advent is? How could I? I'm a devout worshipper of Euros. I'm pretty sure I saw you sleeping the last I was in church with all of you.
I turned away and began walking in a random direction.
I'm going home to bed.
He took my arm and began leading me a different way. Come on. You're in enough trouble, so let's make a detour.
Is that a good idea? I asked uneasily. With them after us.
They aren't after us anymore. Not you and me, at least. And we'll practically be on Wisteria Hollow's property anyway. I need to show you what Star Advent is.
Don't worry, he added, guessing my thoughts. There are no dark ceremonies, no heathens lying together under the moon.
Lying together under the moon?
I suppose that's a delicate way of referring to something sordid.
It's not always so sordid. Sometimes it's part of the Alanzan wedding service, he explained.
Perfectly respectable.
I thought about what Mira had said, that Alanzan morals were the same as ours, but I didn't want him to know I'd asked about such things.
How so?
There's a line in the ceremony. I will take your hand and lie with you in the groves, under the light of the moon.
Well, that's pretty, I said reluctantly. But I take it sometimes lying together under the moon is as sordid as it sounds.
He considered for several moments.
Yes. Yes, sometimes it is.
After cutting through more wooded areas for a while, we entered a field. It was desolate and overgrown with weeds, probably abandoned in one of the wars with the Ikori.
This should be open enough, Cedric said, though I noticed he stopped near the tree line so we weren't entirely exposed.
He spread his cloak out on the ground and lay down on one side, gesturing for me to do the same. Puzzled, I gingerly crouched down and then stretched out beside him.
There wasn't a lot of room.
He pointed.
Look up. Away from the moon.
I did. At first, I saw nothing but the stars set across the darkness of the sky. It reminded me of Blue Spring, with so many more stars visible than around the lights of Osfro. I was about to ask him what I was looking for when I saw a streak of light in the sky. I gasped. And another soon followed.
A shooting star, I said, delighted as I saw another.
Is that why you're out here?
How did you know?
I'd seen one as a child, completely by chance.
It happens every year around this time.
I never know the exact dates, but the astronomers figure it out. We say they're the tears of the six wayward angels, weeping for their estrangement from the great god Euros.
Another star streaked above us.
You worship Euros?
Of course. He's the Sky Father.
We acknowledge that, just as the Orthodox do. And we pray during Star Advent that Euros and all the angels, glorious and wayward, will be reconciled. It's a time for us, too, to put away grudges and find peace.
I watched the stars. I'd like to find peace with you.
I'm sorry for what I said after the gala.
He sighed.
No, I'm sorry. You were right. Warren Doyle is a good match. His approach rubbed me the wrong way, but that doesn't mean there's anything amiss.
Well, that might not exactly be true.
I told Cedric about the revelations at the party. Aghast, he propped himself up on one elbow and stared down at me.
His body seemed to be only a heartbeat away from mine.
What? Why are you only just mentioning this?
Well, I said dryly, I was kind of busy saving you and your heretic friends.
Adelaide, this is...
I don't know, this is bad.
Yes.
Or is it? I asked. I mean, I didn't like her manner, but I was already considering Warren.
I don't know.
Before, it was your choice. Now it's becoming blackmail. If I married him, she'd have no motivation to sell me out. But she'd always hold that over you. Someone who's threatening to do it now will never let that go. And if she does tell now, then some enterprising scoundrel in hope of a bounty carries me back to Osfrid. Unless I get the security of marriage. With Warren or someone else.
I'll marry you myself before I let you do that.
There was a hardness to his voice. No joking. I still managed to laugh, but there was a catch in it. Maybe it was because of the earlier excitement. Maybe it was because we were lying out alone under the stars. Maybe it was simply the boldness of what he'd said, and what it would mean.
Last I checked, you aren't in a position to let me do anything.
He was so close to me, his body leaning into mine. I could see the lines of his face, the shape of his lips, and of course I could smell that damned vetiver.
Besides, what use could an art-forging renegade noble possibly be to some tree-worshipping...
I can't say the kiss was entirely unexpected, and I can't say I hadn't wanted it. There was a hesitancy to it at first, as though he worried I might protest. He should have known better. I parted my lips and heard a small sound of surprise catch in his throat, and then all nervousness between us vanished. I'd say I yielded to him, except I was every bit as aggressive as he was. I wrapped my arms round his neck to pull him closer, crushing his lips to mine. It was the great release of months and months of pent-up... attraction? Lust? A deeper feeling? Whatever it was, I let it sweep me away. I'd shared a few polite kisses in ballroom corners that seemed to belong to some other world. There was nothing polite here. It was hungry and consuming, almost an attempt by each of us to possess the other. I felt my whole body respond when he shifted his over mine. One of his hands cupped my face, and the other rested on my hip. After years of virtue lectures, I'd always wondered how silly girls could give theirs up. Now I understood.
Chapter 17. Cedric held to his word about keeping me away from Warren. He didn't appear on the schedule for the next few days. I encountered him once on an outing into town with the other girls, but it was too brief and too public for him to go off on one of his impassioned pleas. He made no secret of how excited he was to see me, and I responded as politely as I could, even as he bragged about how they'd arrested three Alonzans the night of the Star Advent, something that caused me pain because I knew it caused Cedric pain. On the bright side, there was no sign of his mother, or any indication she was acting upon her threat. I should have been pleased with this development. I should have used this time to think about my next move, and how best to navigate these uncertain waters Viola Doyle had cast me into. But mostly, I just thought about Cedric. If I was being honest with myself, Cedric had been on my mind since the moment we met. I'd just worked to keep my feelings pushed off to the side of my mind. But now that I'd unlocked my heart and admitted to those feelings, well, now there was no keeping him out of my head. I found myself constantly replaying every moment from that night under the stars, the exact moment our lips had met, the way his fingers had loosened my hair, the boldness of his hand moving up to the side of my thigh, but never any farther. Sometimes at the right time of day, they can catch a glimpse of each other across the sky. Nothing more. I couldn't sleep. I could hardly eat. I moved around in a glorious haze, high on the thrill of what had happened between us, even though that high was dampened by the knowledge it wouldn't, that it couldn't happen again. At least he never told me it was a mistake. I always remembered that cautionary tale Tamsin had told us, about the girl she knew in Osfro who'd given up a lot more than kisses to a man who'd promised her everything, only to later tell her it had been a misunderstanding. But Cedric never spoke of regrets, or any other humiliating excuses. In some ways that made it worse. It meant that he didn't think it was a mistake. And I didn't either.
Neither of us could deny, however, that it complicated things. So really we found it best to speak as little as possible to each other. Not because of any animosity, but because we simply didn't trust ourselves. One day, however, communication was unavoidable. Several of us were about to go to a party, and he pulled me aside while the others were distracted. We stood several inches apart, and I counted every single one of them. "I've found someone for you," he told me, casting a quick look back at the doorway. "A good man. I could tell when I spoke to him. And then I verified it with some sources who know his servants. You can always tell a lot about someone by their servants," Cedric hesitated. "And he's very candid. Amusing. I thought you'd like that too." Awkwardness joined the electric attraction between us. It was more than a little weird to have the man I so desperately wanted finding a suitable husband for me. "Thank you for that," I said, not sure what else to say. "He's out of town right now, but I've arranged for you to meet at the end of the week. There's just one problem." I couldn't help but smile. "Cedric, there are a lot of problems. Don't I know it? But he's... well, he's a lawyer. Still getting established. His house in town is small. Nice, but small. And he has only two servants." "I see. A lawyer, while a respectable position here in the colonies, would not provide the luxury that, say, a plantation owner or shipping magnate would. Certainly not what a governor might offer. Two servants meant I'd most likely be helping with some of the household tasks." "You'd always be provided for," said Cedric quickly. "You'd be comfortable. Still part of some social events, not the top-tier ones, but some. And I've heard he's good. He'll most likely advance, maybe even move into a government position over time. It would be an outstanding match for many of the girls here."
"But not necessarily the diamond."
"No," he agreed. "And he was uncertain you'd even want him, or that he could afford you. He could just afford your minimum bride price if he borrows, but there's no promise of shorty money. I convinced him you'd be worth it." I felt an ache in my chest.
"Of course you did. You can sell salvation to a priest."
He winced. "Adelaide, I know it's not what you'd want."
"No,"
I interrupted. "It's perfect. I'd rather live humbly with a man I can respect, maybe even like, than be pampered by someone who holds a sword over my head."
"You will like him."
The words caught in Cedric's throat. I nearly reached for him, but drew back before something happened I might not be able to control. I clenched my hand into a fist at my side. From the other room I heard someone calling my name. Cedric and I stood together for a heartbeat, saying a million silent things, and then turned to join the others. Mistress Culpepper clucked in disapproval when she saw me.
"Adelaide, where is your jewelry? You've been forgetful all week. Highly inappropriate for a girl of your rank."
"Sorry, Mistress Culpepper. My memory was so filled with details of a forbidden night, I supposed it had little room for much more." Mistress Culpepper snatched the diamond necklace from a servant's hand and held it out to Cedric.
"Mr. Thorne, can you put this on her? I swear if we make it there in time, it will be nothing short of a miracle. Now stand still. Honestly, between the missing wigs and now this, how many more things can go wrong tonight?"
That last part was spoken to Rosamond, who'd snapped a corset string. Mistress Culpepper was frantically trying to replace it. Cedric stood frozen for a few moments, holding the necklace in his hand. It was made of teardrop-shaped diamonds, which I found appropriate. Not wanting to draw attention, he finally stepped behind me and placed the circlet round my neck. I held my breath, amazed that the whole room couldn't see the effect he had on me. His body was right up against mine, and his hands trembled as he tried to fasten the necklace's clasp. When he finally managed it, he smoothed the chain and brushed a few wayward tendrils of hair out of the way. His fingertips were as light as a feather, but I felt goosebumps break out along my skin. I didn't exhale until he backed away. At the end of the week, I finally had an opportunity to meet this lawyer at a party hosted by the Thorns. Several girls had offers now, and although Jasper wasn't particularly concerned about the others, he decided to gather some of his favourite potential suitors all in one place as a way to further interest.
A number of the most prominent Cape Triumph citizens had been invited, in the hopes we'd impress them and increase the buzz. The guests began arriving at Wisteria Hollow well before dinner.